Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Inspire Health Podcast, and thanks for joining back in on our newest series, The Illusion of Free Choice, A Return to Mastering Your Own Life. And today we've got a special guest here with us today, Sean Stone. So Sean's a filmmaker, media host, author, all around truth seeker. One of the things I really appreciate about your work, Sean, is I feel like you've been on this journey for a while, just trying to really figure out what is the truth in so many different areas. I mean, Sean started off as a child actor in a number of his father, Oliver Stone's films like JFK, The Doors, Natural Born Killers. You actually did American history at Princeton University in Oxford, and you ended up having your senior thesis was on the modern history of the New World Order. We'll have to chat about that a little bit. I think that's fascinating. And then went on to become a filmmaker himself and has done a number of movies and documentaries like MetaHuman with Deepak Chopra. Also produced the documentary The Paradigm of Money about Wall Street corruption and collusion with the US government, as well as one that really grabbed our attention. Recently, we watched The Hollywood DC, where you exposed the long and often hidden relationship between Washington politics and the media entertainment complex. So I think we're going to have a lot of stuff to dive into here. So hopefully we'll have enough time to pack it all in. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, when we were putting this series together, as many people have been following it, we're really covering a lot of different angles on this concept of free choice and returning to mastering our own life and what that means. And one of the areas that we really wanted to take a deeper dive into was around media, mainstream media, propaganda, Hollywood, how all of this stuff intermixes, because I mean, in so many ways, this is a massive influence for most people. So when we came across some of your work, particularly your documentary there and some of the stuff we'd followed before, we thought you'd be a great person to shine some light on this area.
Sure. I'll do my best.
So Sean, where do you start? Maybe for people that aren't even aware, what is the mainstream media entertainment complex? What even is that?
Well, you boil it down. I mean, right now, I think there are five or six parent companies that own the majority of what's called mainstream media, as far as like the largest network broadcasters of news, for example, as well as, you know, it sort of ties into then main newspapers, like large newspapers. I mean, I guess there are a few small newspapers remaining, but it's rare, right? For the most part, there's a certain amount of cost involved. So it's consolidated the control of the newsprint, and then like large radio and TV broadcasters, and really look at it and just like a few parent companies owning, again, over about 90% or more, they say, major media. So that's one aspect of the complex, but this is an old, you know, this is old. I mean, back in the 20s, back in the, basically the end of the world, the First World War, it really started the information machine. The government created propaganda en masse for the purpose of bringing Americans into war in Europe, committing us to a war that really was the first time we were involved in European wars in our history. At that point, we had always been more isolationist. We'd always been more focused on the Americas. Obviously, we had warred with Spain, but that was more around Cuba, and then it took us to the Philippines. But ultimately, we were drawn into this European war, and there was an important point that Walt Wilson, the president at the time, was trying to get across, which was, you know, make the American public scared, hateful of the Germans. Right. And this is pre-Nazi Germans. This is the Kaiser and all that. So they created this whole propaganda board, and they had Hollywood celebrities selling war bonds, and obviously movies being created for the purpose of propaganda, posters and all that. And that basically carried over into the origin of what Edward Bernays, who really was the father of modern day publicity. You know, he actually wrote the book Propaganda. He was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, but he basically said, well, propaganda, it became a dirty word. It became associated with government pushing an agenda. So let's call it public relations, right? And that's the more benign form of it. So everything that we see in terms of the mainstream advertising of whether it was cigarettes, alcohol, whatever, McDonald's, I mean, all these things, they're an aspect of this public relations push. And so what you have is a merging of large corporations using advertising, right, selling directly to the public through, you know, through these networks. Oftentimes, if they don't own the network, then they're definitely, you know, paying the network to advertise. And then you basically have, yes, you have this complex that's been created of massive amounts of corporate money owning and controlling the media coming through, but also the corporate money, the same corporations, you know, and their parent corporations that are owning the media are also investing in the politicians and their campaigns, right, to basically put these politicians into office. So you end up with this, you know, again, like a lot of major collusion between the various companies and agendas that are putting politicians into office. Also then lobbying, you know, how do you say they're lobbying the politicians, and you know, oftentimes writing the laws themselves that become laws. The lobbyists are then writing the laws that the politicians, the congressmen, you know, draw up or sign off on. I mean, it's money. It's just this massive, conglomerate of, you know, the richest, most influential companies and people in the world, influencing you through media, through news, through then, you know, filters into entertainment, because again, these companies, studios are owned by these parent corporations. And so it's like the conspiracy operates, you know, it's like at some levels it's direct. I mean, there are definitely situations where parent companies of a, let's say, ABC owned by Disney. I could tell you like a story where my father was doing a series back in the 90s about conspiracies and looking at things like the TWA Flight 800 crash, that actually it was shot out of the sky. That plane, it didn't just crash. It was actually hit by a missile. And I think this came out more recently in recent documentaries, and people started learning about this more recently. But back in the 90s, he wanted to do this in a documentary fashion, like a reality show, conspiracy show. And ABC, owned by Disney, killed the show. So that's one example of how you can censor. But there's also, as we see, what's happening culturally, where it's like once you get an agenda that's, say, you know, woke culture, or, you know, whatever, QAnon is bad, people that support Trump are bad. Like, once you get that into the media zeitgeist, it becomes self-censorship, you see. So once you've pushed that across as an ideology, it self-reinforces. That's how these things work. I mean, in a prison system, once you've created the notion of this is, you know, of the prison guard, right? And you work, you know, the prison guard, you work for the prison, and then you want to be a good prisoner. You want to be on the side of the prison guard. You want to almost, you know, you want to be their capo, right? Or you want to be there, you know, you want to get favors. So you're going to work on behalf of the prison guard. They've created that kind of complex within the psychology of media itself, right? So if you end up like Alex Jones out there, you know, saying something that is offensive, then they sue you for $50 million. But if you're Don Lemon and others who are saying, you know, if you're unvaccinated, you're a menace to society and you should be locked at home, or you know, you should be taxed to 99%. If you're out there threatening people like Biden, saying, you know, you're gonna have a dark winter, that's offensive, but no one sues them for millions of dollars, you see. So what happens is you've created a prison complex within media as to like what you can and can't say. And if you associate with the wrong person today, you know, I'm sorry, yesterday we found out you associated with the wrong person or said the wrong thing, we'll drudge it up and we'll pull it up, you know, we'll use it against you and turn you into, you know, you name it, like what happens to a Weinstein or a Kevin Spacey or whatnot, right? And when the system turns against them, we all have skeletons of some sort. Obviously theirs are uglier, but the point is that when the system turns against you, it's very easy to pull things out and use it against someone to shut them down or to censor them or to push them out of the ring of a power.
Yeah. It goes pretty deep, and there's a lot of complexities to it. But one thing I think maybe is important to kind of get clear is I know you had mentioned about 90% of the mainstream media is owned by six primary overseeing companies. And I think you had mentioned in your documentary back in 1983, it was owned by more 50 companies. So you can see how information would be a little more diverse, and there'd be different, because one thing that I think a lot of people question is, it's like, well, how could you possibly organize that much of the same message going across all of population? But when you narrow it down, you kind of look, it's not that hard when you chisel it down to a few key companies governing all of that information, and then it just filters down. What are those biggest companies? What are the ones that that you know about that are the top six that kind of oversee everything?
Yeah, I mean, it's There are graphs you can pull up. I mean, it's pretty easy to find out who the parent companies are, but they're interlocking. I mean, it's like you go to the heart of it, then you look at who owns those companies, and it's all cross. If you understand is that there was a study done by the Swiss back in 2012, 13, 14, somewhere in there. I think I reference it in my New World Order book, but they basically showed how there's like 1,000 interlocking companies that have the majority of the world's wealth in their control. And that's like, then you look at things like, okay, how does BlackRock and Main Street and Vanguard, BlackRock and Vanguard are basically like one company, mm-hmm. but you look at they're the majority stockholders. And so their shareholders are, you know, obviously like you say, anyone can buy in. Sure. If you have a few $100,000 to buy a stock of BlackRock, but like, who is the governing board? You see, who has preferential stock? Who's actually like, who's really in a position of influence at these type of investment companies? And then again, like how small that world becomes when you realize that BlackRock and Vanguard and Main Street, and they're all crossed, they own each other, and they also own all the majors, they're the majority stockholders in all the major companies. So this is just like a little glimpse into it. Then you have to understand the ideology. It's like the Council on Foreign Relations people have talked about for decades, going back to when it was created. Really, it was an offshoot of the Royal Institute of International Affairs. It was the British sort of think tank, right, that was spawned here. It was very much JP Morgan bankers that were involved in setting up the CFR. We talk about that in the New World Order book a little bit. But the CFR's agenda has always been a certain so-called called liberal policy, but it's an international, it's a globalist policy, essentially. And so you look at who the Secretary of States and the presidents and the major, you know, influencers within government, within media, they're all members of CFR. So it's not to say like it's a secret society where, you know, they all like are initiated the same way. But once you're in CFR, there's, how do you say, it's like World Economic Forum. It's like there's a certain ideology that is pervades the ethos. And so that's why, you know, fundamentally what we've seen across the board for the last 100 years is what? It's an expansion of government power. I go back to World War I for a reason. Before World War I, the United States government made up, I think, about less than 9% of the GDP of the country. Imagine where the US government now is when it's spending trillions of dollars, right? And it's like the government has become a huge employer, has become a huge employer and activator of our economy, right? It's driving, we call it military industrial complex, but it's employing people from all sectors of that. It's not just military, it's science and technology, right? It's infrastructure, it's education, right? It's like all these different things. So the federal government has become consolidated and centralized in its influence and power. Simultaneously, you see what's happened with the major corporations of the world. It's the concentration and centralization of wealth into fewer and fewer hands, and these companies are global. So it's not hard for people to see the conspiracy at this point. It's not like, I don't think people are having a hard time saying like, that's a conspiracy. It's more like, oh, well, that's just the natural way of things. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, of course they want to, you know, of course they want to have more influence and power. And that's just, so there's those that like see it and are really starting to question like why this doesn't make sense. And there are those that are just kind of like, yeah, well, that's just, you know, why shouldn't Pfizer be sponsoring all the commercials on the news? And why shouldn't Pfizer be trying to make as much money as they can? And why shouldn't Pfizer be able to get away with whatever it needs to get away with? Because there's just an assumption that that's the natural order of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, it might tie in a little bit too with the idea of like culture being used to socially engineer people. So at that point, even if you're aware of it and you think things, you know, you think that maybe is okay. How much of that has actually been kind of driven in, whether unconsciously or just through propaganda, through whatever, as far as that becoming almost like a program that people run?
Yeah. Because it's major, so I'm reading a book right now by Thomas Sowell, one of the great conservative intellectuals of the last century, who was not just a great economist, but he was, you know, as far as sociology was concerned, just mapping this. He wrote a great important book called Intellectuals and Society. And he focuses that book on exactly this point of how the intellectual class has permeated the way that we see the world, but they don't necessarily get they're not always credited as such, or they're sort of assumed to be more intelligent, or, you know, they're studied, so they can say what they want, you know, whether they're influencing economic policy, whether they're influencing, whether they're testifying, you know, for Congress, whether they're testifying in courts, you know, whether they're influencing medical policy. I mean, all of this is an intellectual class. And so you have to kind of get to this issue of is there a certain ideology that's been pervasive within the intellectual class for the last 100 years? And it has been more of a globalist agenda. I mean, I chart that with my New World Order book by focusing on the intellectual background of Henry Kissinger, who was mentor at Harvard, was for 40 years professor emeritus there in politics, mentoring people like Kissinger and many others, many other national security advisors, and people like the political figures that came through. Simultaneously, he was a CIA officer. Simultaneously, he was advising presidents. Simultaneously, he was close with like the Rockefeller brothers funds and board and advising the activities of Rockefeller Foundation and things like this. I mean, these studies were done back in the 50s. There was the Reese Committee, I think, that talked about the foundations, the influence of foundations. Now we talk about Soros Foundation, right? And how much that's, you know, affecting not just district attorneys, you know, they're putting money into the elections of district attorneys and you name it, like at every level of government, the Soros Foundation is trying to influence policy. It's sending out moveon.org messages, right, to tell people to mobilize, you know, against whatever it may be, the deplorables or Donald Trump or whatever. That's all Soros Foundation. But there's also Gates Foundation, which, as we know, is huge in terms of what? Everything from the CDC to the World WHO. I mean, all, you know, that's Gates Foundation money, right? Pushing this whole vaccine agenda for the last, you know, 20 years, but not just vaccines, just many agendas.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Then you have, you know, things like Rockefeller Foundation, which is well over 100 years old, influencing the establishment of these universities, and the establishment of the American Medical Association, influencing the so, you know, you go into this, go into the Ford Foundation, like all these foundations, this private money that's influencing the universities, it's influencing the agendas and the policies that are being pushed. So, you know, even before the corporate money, there was the foundation money that was going in to really affect the path forward for what America's trajectory was meant to be from the First World War since then, that time of us being more on this globalist bend of involving ourselves in European and foreign wars that previously we had been opposed to. In that so-called America First mentality, which was really the Washingtonian tradition when Washington left office, saying no entangling alliances, you know, really trying to keep us out of empire and empire building.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you were talking about the Rockefeller Foundation. We did a episode a while back with Dr. Rick Kirshner, who wrote a documentary called How Healthcare Became Sick Care. And he goes through the whole sort of, and he talks about basically the AMA and the FDA and the Rockefeller. I mean, it was all Rockefeller funded with a very targeted agenda that it got moved towards as far as getting in control of the direction that medicine was going to be moving in. I'll put a link for that so people can check that out. But that gets into it really. You'll see kind of the overlap on this kind of stuff as we're talking about it. One thing I'm curious about is, you know, right now it feels like there's more sort of shakeup for people now than I think ever as far as kind of seeing some of that, seeing the writing on the wall a little bit more clearly. And still lots of people that can't see it at all or don't want to see it. I'm not too sure. But how does From your perspective and researching and even being in the industry for so long, where do things like Hollywood and movies and even the mainstream media, as far as how does the propaganda work? Like, is there a recipe that they follow that makes people more susceptible to being influenced? Is there something that you've come across as far as, because I'm kind of thinking, like, if people can hear it, maybe they're more likely to be able to see it when it's taking place again.
Well, you're talking about what's called like predictive programming and like seeding things, which I tend to actually believe is more of a magical operation than it is like intentional. Like a lot of life is synchronicity and just tuning into the consciousness, right? So I think a lot of times there are writers and there are creatives who are either, you know, being used, whether consciously or not, to an agenda that can serve this, you know, predictive programming of like moving us towards like a Brave New World type of society, right? Or 1984 type of society of like accepting our transhuman, you know, controllers and accepting, like, how do you say these shifts? I mean, it's difficult to say like specifically like who's running it, because there's an influence in Hollywood of the military industrial complex. I mean, that's what the Hollywood DC tries to show. And I think there are deeper layers that I don't get into because I don't have the facts behind it. There are a lot of people that have been out there talking about, you know, under like tunnels under the Getty Museum, for example, in LA, and how that can be like one of the places maybe used for trafficking. I know that there are underground things in LA. Like, I've always heard, I was originally told about it because it was more like, it was assumed to be for like escape purposes for people to like escape in case of a crisis, but I don't think that's all it's used for. And again, like the military having a presence, like think about it like this, one way that you would want to like maybe R&D, like some very advanced technology might be through Hollywood. Maybe like that's just, I always put it like this, if you had like an alien craft on a back lot, people would think it was made for like a movie, right? I mean, just saying, like, that's like a theoretical situation. I don't know if that's true. But my point is, we have to understand that like also in Disney here in Florida, where I live, it's like Disney World is notoriously like connected to military. In fact, I have my suspicions when the those zombie attacks occurred back in 2012, when they called them meth addicts, or no, was it like crystal meth they were saying or something like that? It was bath salts. They were like a string of people that got attacked with like people that were supposedly on bath salts, but they looked like zombies. And they were like basically like impenetrable. They were jumping out second, third story windows and like running. Like they were like very intense states, almost like zombified. And they were trying to bite people. And there were a few of those attacks. And I think a few of them were actually around Orlando. And like some of us were like, maybe they got escaped from under Disney World. Because again, I mean, Disney World is so massive. It's a no-fly zone. It's got a huge, as you know, it's got a huge deal with the military and in terms of like the taxes and everything, like how it's been able to operate. Like basically it was got like the land, I think, was almost given to it. It was just like a very strange thing with Disney World in Florida. So I really have my suspicions about how much R&D goes through, like, again, like deep, you know, secret military programs. Take MKUltra. I mean, MKUltra we know about. That was a mind control thing the CIA did. The manipulation of people and then, you know, basically creating alternate personalities. Obviously, some actors have that. Some artists have that. Are some of them created intentionally? You know, put out into the world of stardom intentionally created. I know Anna K. Lucas talks about this. She's someone that I featured in my Best Kept Secret docuseries. And when I interviewed her, she talked about how, like, obviously her story is horrendous. She was basically raped, you know, as a child, but essentially she was part of a network. And she basically said that initially she was being groomed by a very powerful, influential man in world affairs. And she actually believes that he was grooming her to become basically a starlet ultimately, or to be used potentially as a starlet. I mean, she could have been used for any number of things, but ultimately she rejected some level of the ritual. She goes, I can't remember the details. She'd have to watch, you have to read her book or watch the interview I did with her to go into it. But she basically at some point did not comply. She was too rebellious in her spirit. So they basically sent her to a lesser ring, like a not as influential ring, but still a pedophile ring that was murderous and cruel and horrible. But the point is that I have no doubt that this kind of stuff does occur. So again, all these things are more the rumored side of Hollywood, but it's not like Hollywood is a totally controlled thing. And yet at the same time, there's something underneath it all. It's connected to cults, you know, as far as like masonry, even satanic church. It's connected to, again, deep military things, but all these things do interlap. That's where people have to understand that there is, you know, again, there's a deep connection when it comes to the cult network globally, you know, and you could call it satanic, because I'm not saying like every Mason, I mean, I'm initiated in masonry, not every Mason is like a Satanist. It's just that there are different cults that operate and oftentimes draw upon people that are initiated into these groups, because people who oftentimes initiate these groups are power seeking. And when you're power seeking in a worldly sense, it's, I think, very easy to be manipulated towards basically doing things that are horrendous for your own gain, for your own gain of wealth or influence, money, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
So Sean, you're saying that you believe that some of it is, a lot of it could be organic, like it can just happen because certain people are just easily under the influence or they're impressionable.
When you say it, what do you mean is it organic? Which it?
Like as far as when you're speaking of how, like if this is all orchestrated, like as far as the certain messages that are coming forth and being broadcasted to the masses, like, sorry, can you go back to it? Are they orchestrated, or like, is it orchestrated by the main groups, like the main people that are behind these corporations? Is there a mass orchestration of the messages that are being put out?
What's happened is, here's what people have to understand. There is magic in this realm. We are involved with it. Every human being is involved with it. It's like the more you awaken, the more you take your power back. The less you awake you are, the more you stay a puppet. But ultimately, we're all involved in it because our consciousness is collective. So we collectively manifest things. The dark has understood this for a long time. It's not just dark. The dark has manipulated it for a long time. Magic is magic. You can, you know, ultimately this is, I believe that this realm is controlled by a higher power that is, you could call God. It's good. It's a force that ultimately is moving us in evolutionary terms towards greater self-awareness. And in the sense of self-awareness, we actually will deepen our connection with everyone else because we're all one. So there is no, if we understand oneness, nothing is separate. The dark is serving the light. The dark is helping humanity to see things that are uncomfortable but they're necessary for our growth. The only way to grow is through discomfort. There's no way that we're going to evolve as humans without this dark side. And it has to get uglier in a sense because people are so deep asleep. And at some point, it seems that this is where we are now. There will be no return. Some of those that are so deep asleep will not have an opportunity to awaken to their true sovereignty and to their true sense of self in this dimension. They'll simply be checked out in the sense that they'll move into a different dimension or in some sense transhumanized or roboticized. So they'll lose some aspect of that soul, if not all of it, the power of the soul that we have within us as organic living beings. So what I'm saying is that the dark side is only an illusion of darkness. They use catastrophic events at some level. It's dark. You could say dark because they feed on lower frequencies of pain and fear and suffering and things like this. But at a higher level, the light uses those same events for the awakening of humanity, for the awakening of our shared humanity by moving through trauma to basically become more empathetic, more aware of all things, because if you can't look into the dark, you are not awake. You see, the star is awake because it has the ability to be light in the darkness. And if people want to just pretend the darkness is not there, then they're not awake. So the dark side has been doing very important work to actually activate and challenge And yes, and traumatize. Unfortunately, we need trauma to grow. It's an aspect of this evolutionary experience.
Mm-hmm. You know, I completely understand what you're saying around that too. And it's one of these conversations where you're like, you want the sort of deliberate use of traumatizing people, I think, in like movies and horror movies and stuff like this. But at the same point, if that is the level of consciousness people are interested in participating in, then that's what they're wanting. So when Correct. You're talking about that, this is, we're co-creating our reality in all of this way, and we're directly, to me, it's like, we really need to be, we have to make specific actions. We have to be in this physical reality and make different choices if we're not wanting to. But the only way that happens is when it actually feels inside you like you want to be making those different choices. So it's a catchy thing. You know, sometimes I feel like, where's the value in trying to shed light on sometimes where people might be being manipulated? Or, you know, for a while with all the stuff around COVID, there was a period of time where we created a group called Follow Your Oath, and we were trying to show as much information as we could on the other side, just to sort of show other pieces of the puzzle that were being pulled away or hidden, and share information that other people were sharing. And I think that's probably helpful to a point. You know, it kind of appeals to the intellect, but at a certain point, it's not the intellect that's going to take you any farther. It's really got to be a transition from a frequency sort of level. And then at that point, then what no longer is in resonance is just no longer in resonance. It's like, then it's very clear with inside yourself. So I guess maybe the conversation needs to move towards, how do we all start to do that, where we embody more, we're being sort of in, how would I say it? It's like we're being informed by the pure love aspect or by the higher self, as opposed to being informed by the ego mind identity or the false self, or however you want to use the terminology around that. What's the process to connect more to what is true, so that then we can see truth more clearly? The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It's really more of a being. It's more of a being experience. It's like the intuition is a being experience. It's a felt experience. And to be something is to know it, so that you don't have to even really talk about it anymore. So the problem is, we are we're really working on waking ourselves up. As to what you were saying about like trying to wake up others. I was having this conversation with someone recently. I was like, no, actually we can't. We're not mm-hmm. here to wake up anyone else. We're here because we're here basically as beings expressing our essence. It's like, you know, we each of us is just, you know, we're stars, right? So what does a star do? It shines. We each shine in our different way. We express ourselves in our different ways. And if we feel empowered to, by expressing ourselves in the discourse that comes with this, exchanging ideas, challenging things, rebelling, trying things, daring, you know, then we are having like an authentic experience of our reality. We can trust at the same time that the evolution of consciousness is inevitable. We're not here to, you know, we're not here to hasten anything in a sense. We are just here at the flow that it's occurring, and simultaneously we're activating ourselves. So as we shift in this time period away, it will be more in the way of shifting away from like, again, this is left brain logic. A lot of magic is ancient writing, you know, it's spelling, it's writing. So a lot of this is just coded by the way that we think about the world, as opposed to like really just tuning in and feeling. And, but, you know, I don't know, like I started tuning into like this new earth frequency a few years ago, and it comes and goes. But what I get, what the sense I get is just, it's a very energetic experience of reality that we're moving into, more empathetic. And when you're in empathy, you let go of ego naturally. This is so film in many ways has been an educational tool, and it'll continue to be an educational tool for people. But like, in a sense, we're realizing that we're living the film. And so when you're, as you know, when you're watching a film, what you're doing is you're empathizing with the characters. You don't feel jealous that, oh, you know, I like that girl on screen, she's kissing that guy, I'm jealous, right? You feel like, oh, I'm into their romance, right? But in our real lives, we feel jealousy. So really we need the empathetic side of us is actually expanding in this coming time past these ego notions of like possession, possession, jealousy, because these are such a roots. I mean, look at the Adam and Eve story. Like these are really kind of essential roots, knowledge as well, like essential roots of our fall is this disconnection, right? Through separation, as opposed to the oneness that we are, being able to deeply connect to other beings at energetic levels. And as such, realize their joy is our joy. Their sorrow is our sorrow. We've always known that when we told stories, we've always known that when we watched movies. So that's why those experiences were important towards evolving us towards the ultimate evolution, which is not to say like, well, we're going to lose entirely. Like there's a sense of self. There's a sense of identity of Sean, because I have this perspective of the world. And yet I know that I am more than Sean. I am many more beings that have lived on this world than other worlds. And at any moment I can transcend this being. So it's like, it's not to say it's a false self. It's just a smaller sense of self. And then there's the greater senses of self. And then the greater sense of self can always tune in to others and find this direct connection, this direct empathetic connection that we are. It's just energy and be in that experience of whatever it may be, love, tragedy, ecstasy, fear, you name it, right? And to really tune into that experience. And ultimately, if you can transmute those lesser emotions, right? What are lesser emotions, like fear states, anguish, right? Despair. If we can transmute them more rapidly, not to say forget them, but just work through them more rapidly and raise them into love, states of love and higher vibration, then that is the great work.
Mm-hmm. Sean, what was your motivation for writing and for producing some of the series that you have, where you do bring a lot of awareness to stuff like the Hollywood DC and the paradigm of money, which I think is really beneficial to sort of kind of put it out so that people can see another narrative?
Well, that's why we do it. I mean, all the things that I've done, from the interviews to the documentaries to the films, I mean,